Welcome to ITE 1, Module 5, and you actually have an awake lecturer today, because I've been awake since 2:30 this morning grading labs, so I'm actually fairly awake this morning. This is good.
We'll see how long it lasts for the rest of the day.
Absolutely.
That's what I said.
Until I crash and fall asleep on my desk. Okay. Any questions? Go ahead, sorry.
Please, headphones are a great idea just for everybody. I think we're going to start asking people to use headphones, headsets, if at all possible.
Please, please.
We do not enjoy echo back on channel. Unless you have a medical reason why you can't use headphones or a safety reason, please avail yourself of a headset. It is actually a requirement of enrolling in these courses. Having a headset microphone says so on ciscovision.org.
Yep. Okay, so, just wanted to check on anyone having any issues with labs or any of that.
Are we going to do a study group tomorrow? I'm sure we are.
Yeah, we're doing study group tomorrow. We're going to work on 5.4.8, which is the basic tour through all sorts of managing system files and stuff. So, 9 o'clock, if you want help with that worksheet, please show up. We're seriously going to go right through the whole thing, or as much of it as I can do in an hour. It should be good. So please come to study group if you want help with that. The two research assignments for this week, 5.2.2 and 5.3.2, if you need help with those, please tell us, and we can set up a time to work on those, a separate whole study group for that, if you'll need the research work.
With the chapter 5 labs, if you have Windows 7, you do Windows Vista, is that correct?
You do, for now. Yep, you do. And if you
Vista
are...
Vista labs may be coming in the future.
Seven labs are supposed to be coming.
Or 7 labs, I mean. That's what I meant.
Show up to study group, and I will help you through the bits that are different of those labs.
Change adapter settings.
Change adapter settings is what you want if you're doing Windows 7. Hit change adapter settings and the old network dialogs you know and love pop up from Windows Ancient. And you go, ooh, that's where it all is. So change adapter settings.
That helps.
I think we should write that into the lab, actually. I'm going to go and edit that into the lab.
Yeah. I think, don't.
Because those are not going to be Windows. Those are not going to be for Windows 7 people much longer. They are going to get their own labs. That's why I have not edited any of the Windows 7.
But when are we getting
them? March, which could be like tomorrow.
And by the time they're actually rejigged for the actual blind people, I'm thinking we just edit them in now so that we don't have to keep telling people change adapter settings.
Because those
then
are coming.
Have to put them back and again.
Yeah, basically, yeah. That's the feeling.
Then
what if
have
Cisco
to
don't release till April,
new
though?
Each time.
Then they won't release till April, but they're coming.
I've got a shell script that makes the zip file, Tom. That's no problem. I can make a zip every 37 seconds if that's required.
No, we're not editing them. Because they will be coming, and yeah. Been assured that they're coming because they just did a refresh of the entire curriculum and all the exams and everything, so hold on for those. It's coming.
Okay, so it's still a work in progress.
The exams have been refreshed, the curriculum's been refreshed, the labs are the last thing to be refreshed.
Okay.
So if you need help with the Windows Vista 7 labs, then come to study group and we will work through them together and know that they're coming, probably the week after we do 5.4.8, but you know, you get that. Okay, any other lab questions? Cool. Guys, please, if you have not done your assembly, disassembly labs and the other labs in Module 2 and 3 and 4, please get those in because 5 is pretty amazing with lab content. There are actually 10 labs that you have to do something in and work through. There are 14, including the ones that you just read. So you've got a lot of work in Module 5 and quite a bit in Module 6, and you don't really get a break until Module 7. So you have a lot of work ahead of you. Please try and get those things in so that you can keep up with the class. Very important.
They should really try and be distributing this stuff a little more evenly throughout the course. I mean, in certain ways, this is a bit silly.
Yeah, they should, but we've always said to people, work ahead, if you possibly can. And unfortunately, we don't get to set the actual course content. We wish we could. It is up to what Cisco gives us. So the only advice we can give is work ahead as far as you can so that when you hit module 5, it's not like hitting a brick wall.
I did give some suggestions as to labs to work ahead on doing. A couple people have followed that, and they will find that their lives are extremely much easier this week because they already have 5.2.2 done, which is one of the more interesting research labs. So their lives will be significantly easier this week. Any other questions on labs before I start? I'm just looking for the... Okay, cool. Well, we'll start our Module 5, which is operating systems. As soon as I plug my poor computer in. There we are.
I thought it was your phone. I was going to say it's sounding about as healthy as mine does.
It's good now. It's my phone and my computer. Okay.
Get Cassie to take you to a swap meet in Melbourne. The new batteries are $3.
Oh, yeah. Take me to a where? Because, if I could find one that'd fit, that'd be awesome.
Talk to Will and Gemma.
Okie dokie.
It's Aaron. Oh, okay. All right. So, for the past few weeks, we have mainly been talking about the hardware of the computer. Today, we're going to be discussing a computer's most important piece of software, the operating system, or OS, which controls almost all computer functions. The curriculum discusses Windows 2000, XP, Vista, and the very latest Microsoft OS, Windows 7, thanks to our lovely refresh in January. So, instead of hearing my take on Windows 7, which was all you got last year, you're going to get the curriculums as well. Alright. All operating systems are responsible for 4 basic tasks, which we're going to talk about in detail. These tasks are control hardware access, manage files and folders, provide a user interface, and manage applications. Operating systems are the middleman between applications and hardware. A driver is a small program installed with each hardware device that allows the operating system to recognize, assign resources to, and allow applications to use hardware. These drivers are created by the device manufacturer and found on CDs that come with the product, manufacturer websites, and Windows updates. The best place to find the latest drivers is the manufacturer website. That's in at least one of your tests, but I don't believe it's in the Module 5 test. So it is very important
too.
To know that. Yes, it's you're going to see that at least once. Okay, the plug and play process was introduced in Windows 95. This allows devices to be detected, drivers to be installed, and resources assigned automatically. The operating system then configures the device and updates the registry, which is a database that contains all the information about the computer. The registry contains information about applications, users, hardware, network settings, and file types. We'll be going into more detail about that later on in our lecture. The next thing we want to talk about is file management. The operating system creates a file structure on the hard disk drive to allow data to be stored. A file is a block of related data that is given a single name and treated as a single unit. Files are stored in directories so that they can be found easily. If you didn't have directories, your files would just be all over in one big block, and you wouldn't be able to separate out your program files from your data files. And imagine how much fun it would be to actually try to find a file. It does, too.
It's like my documents folder.
Actually, it looks like Grace's root directory used to. She used to have about 100 documents all just stashed in the root drive because it's just easier to save them in C:\. She's currently changed her ways, but there used to be a lot of stuff lurking in there.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. All right. Directories can have other directories inside of them called subdirectories. In Windows, these are called folders and subfolders. Here's an example. The C drive is usually the main drive for Windows machines. Your C drive is the root of your file system, which means it is the highest level folder. Program files is a subfolder within C that contains files and folders for the applications installed on your computer. Okay, so the third function of an operating system is providing a user interface. Your computer would just be a big heavy paperweight, and it wouldn't do a lot of good for you if you couldn't use your hardware and applications. The user interface allows you to interact with your computer. There are two types of user interfaces. Command line interface, CLI, allows you to type commands at the command prompt. A graphical user interface, GUI, allows you to interact with menus, icons, and other various graphical elements using a keyboard or mouse. Your Windows operating system includes both. You guys get to do a really cool lab later that demonstrates the two user interfaces. It's a run command, and you get to, I think you get to schedule tasks or something using both methods, and it's very cool to see the differences.
No, I think that's chapter 12.
That is chapter 12. Yeah. There's one in 5 that you do something similar, but I don't remember what you get to do.
Yeah, I think it's just opening programs or something.
Something like that. Okay, the last of the four basic functions is application management. Can anyone tell me any applications? Let's name some applications.
Outlook.
Microsoft Word.
Outlook and Microsoft Word. Your screen readers are applications, JAWS and VDA. Visual Studio, isn't that a programming language?
That is an application. It's actually a development environment. It's not a programming language.
Yeah, you write Visual Basic with that, right?
Yeah.
Or is that something else?
Visual Studio is an integrated development environment. You actually develop programs with Visual Studio, and I think it can do Visual Basic and Visual C++. It does a number of languages, and I think it does C# as well.
Okay. So, when you open an application, for example, Notepad, you click on its icon or type in Notepad into the Run dialog box. Notepad is then loaded into RAM by the computer. So the GUI way of opening Notepad is to go into Windows 7, type in the search box Notepad. You're going to go down the list and find Notepad where it popped up, and press Enter, and there it is. You've opened Notepad. To use the CLI, you will go and type Windows R, which will bring up your Run dialog box, and type in Notepad, and press Enter.
Has anyone done that with WinWord?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you type in WinWord, if you've never done it, something you should try if you have Microsoft Word installed is to go into the Run dialog box, type in WinWord, and see what happens. Okay, so when you open an application, it's loaded into RAM. Can anyone tell me what RAM stands for?
Random Access Memory.
That's right. Good job, Vanessa. Virtual Lollipop. All right. This operating system also makes sure that the application has enough resources to run. Now, this is in your test. An application programming interface, or API, is a set of guidelines used by programmers to ensure that the application they are developing is compatible with the operating system. Two examples of APIs are OpenGL and DirectX. Can anyone name something else that has an API?
Jaws.
Yeah, Zappy does.
Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, Zappy
Twitter
is.
Does.
It yeah. is an API.
How many people go on about their API calls every third tweet and then wonder why they run out of them?
Tiny Song has an API.
Oh, okay, yeah. Google.
I know somebody that
Google
wrote
Voice
a client
has
that
something
was great
like an
until
API.
It broke.
The Bean Free Library and Bookshare have APIs because I believe that's how Kurzweil accesses them.
Possibly. All right, cool. In order to be able to compare the features of an operating system, it is important to understand and review some basic concepts. Multi-user, two or more users can work with programs and share peripheral devices, such as printers, at the same time. Okay, so Windows, by definition, unless you're using a server environment, is not multi-user. Just so everybody knows. Multitasking is when the computer is capable of operating multiple applications at the same time. So your Windows is definitely multitasking, or else we wouldn't all be sitting here right now. Can anyone tell me what a multiprocessing operating system is? Don't all speak at once.
If no one else is going to talk, that would be like my my roommate's six-core system that has like six processors, so that can do the work of one, so they can get six times the processing power.
Yeah, absolutely. This can either be.
Depends if they're on the one chip, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't. For a multiprocessing system, it can be one core with multiple processors, or two cores with one or multiple processors. It isn't really specific here. Yeah. Multiprocessing
means more
than.
See, I thought like it would be a system with three actual chips in, or two actual.
It can
chips
be,
in.
But it doesn't have
yeah,
to be.
Okay.
What's the
no.
difference between cores and processors? I thought they were the same
Not
thing.
Not quite.
Core is a processor, is the actual processor.
No, don't use the word processor. A core is an execution thread. So basically what happens, if you've got one core, you can run one thread of instructions concurrently. If you have two cores, you can actually run two independent threads of processing logic at the same time. Dual core processors share the same cache, which is why they're dual core. Multiprocessors actually have separate cache, so they don't actually share that. But we don't really cover that in this course.
For what we're talking about, it can be either. It means that the operating system can see more than one processor, be it cores on one chip or multiple chips. Programs can share these two CPUs, possibly, and so that you're going to be able to run more at the same time. They can also be multi-threading, which means a program can be broken down into smaller pieces that can be loaded as needed by the operating system. Most modern operating systems support all of these, except, of course, Windows is not multi-user, and I'm not sure that Mac is either. That's more of a server thing.
I think it can
all modern
be. I think it
oh,
actually can
it?
Be.
Okay.
Carrie, do you know?
Yes, it can be.
Yeah, it does.
You can actually hook multiple monitors up to Macs, and there are ways of hooking multiple keyboards up, but you can actually access Macs over networks. So you can actually have somebody using your Mac remotely via the network and having their own login session.
Oh, yeah, because my friend was doing
that. Oh, that's
kind of
cool.
My friend was doing that through VNC, actually. Is that different?
That's different.
Okay, never mind. But you can
VNC,
do that too.
VNC shares one user session, so if you're logged into your Mac, he sees what you see. There is actually a method of having two people logged concurrently into a Mac, perhaps one using the Mac itself and another one using X Windows, and you can actually have Jim and Bob logged in at the same time. That's what we call multi-user.
Ah, that's very interesting.
You cannot do that on a Windows machine.
Nobody else here in my house has one, so that's not going to... We're not going to play with that, but...
Yeah, I'd like to try that myself.
All right. All modern CPUs can run in different modes of operation. The modes of operation determine how the CPUs manage application and memory. Yeah, me too. This is absolutely killer stuff. And if anyone can explain to me why this is still in the A+ exam, other than just being cool, geeky, and techy, and I didn't even think about it. I was just like, well, it just is. So if anyone can explain to me why this is still relevant... You get extra points, because Carrie pointed this out to me and was wondering why it was still in the curriculum, and I have no idea. These are going to be in your test, though. Because they are on the A+ exam, you will get to see them in your test. So we're going to go over these fairly thoroughly, and you'll want to understand them, because if you don't, you will lose points on your final and on the test, and eventually later in the A+ exam. The first three are processor modes, real mode, protected mode, and virtual real mode, and the fourth one is lumped in here for no reason that I can comprehend, except they couldn't find anywhere else to stick it, and this is called compatibility mode, which is not a processor mode technically, but we'll get there. Okay, when a CPU operates in real mode, it can only run one application at a time and has access to only 1 megabyte of memory. Although all CPUs are capable of real mode, only DOS and Windows 3X and their 16-bit applications use this mode. Real mode provides applications with direct access to system resources. Now, guys, why might this be kind of a bad idea? Does anyone have any guesses?
You could only do one thing in a time.
Viruses, possibly.
Can we get into chat and just type our names into the chat when we want to answer questions like we did last week? That worked really well.
And we have two answers, one being viruses, the other being only doing one thing at a time, which is not quite the answer we want, but they're true to a degree.
Yeah.
Although you can actually multitask in real mode. Aaron and I remember how bad that was.
Not in chat. Okay. Any other reasons?
Yeah, it's basically because there's no prevention from processors accessing each other's memory, and also no limitations on what processors can do to the hardware of the machine.
Close enough. What we were looking for, and yeah, that's absolutely right, but what we're looking for is if one application screws up, which is often happens, your whole system's gone, because that application will never give back the memory, and there's no way for the system to actually take it back. So you're going to have a lot of crashes, and once one application locks up, you're done. It's time to restart your computer, because you're not getting that memory back.
But Grace, JAWS does that under Windows 7. What's the difference? I'm just being flippant.
Well,
that's what Windows F4 is for.
Go ahead, Aiden.
I've used that a time or two.
That's what the control Windows Insert F4 is for.
Yeah, that's what it
the
is.
The Windows Insert F4 will kill the JAWS process.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Is your housemate torrenting or something there, Aiden? You're buffering badly this morning.
Yeah, I thought that was just my internet connection flaking out.
No, something's up with him.
No, it's him.
Well, his internet, probably not with him. I think he's okay.
Well, no,
I don't think he usually buffers right. Like that.
Okay. So now, since we don't use... Somebody's... Okay. In protected mode, this is what we run now. In protected mode, applications are protected from using memory currently in use by other programs. This allows multiple programs to run at once. So basically what's going on is now your operating system will dole out memory as needed, so you have a hope of getting it back. If you don't get it back, well, then you have memory leaks, and you're still not immune to your whole system going down, but it's much less prevalent, and it keeps applications from grabbing resources from other applications, because basically your operating system helps dole it out.
Does anyone remember Windows 95, how you used to have to restart it every day before, otherwise it would fall over, and then Windows 98 got it down to about a week? Does anybody remember those bad old days when, like, rebooting was the norm? I know people who have people coming up, you know, for weeks with machines fired up. Yes, Sean?
This is what Grace was talking about, managing access to hardware. This is what our resources, Windows is saying, applications saying, yes, I want this much memory, and Windows is saying, okay, sure, you can take some and I'll give it to you. This is what she was talking
about earlier. Actually, what actually happens, just as a morbid point of technicality, the application says I want this much memory, and Windows says sure you can have it, but it's not actually until the application goes to use the memory that Windows actually tries to allocate it, and that's why things fall over badly and you get your system is low on virtual memory, because Windows goes sure you can have that memory, and then when it goes to allocate it, it goes, oh croc, I don't actually have that memory.
So
similar. Yeah.
In protected mode? Is that what's a general protection fault, or memory protect fault? Okay. In protected mode, the CPU has access to all of the computer's available memory, including virtual memory. Can anyone define for me what virtual memory is?
It's like either hard drive memory or I think you can even use like some SD cards and stuff, which it's basically tricked itself into thinking is RAM, so it acts like RAM, but it's not. It's memory from another area, is that right?
Yes, that's basically correct. It is basically virtual RAM. It acts as RAM and it holds information in cache so that you can use it. Let's remember to type our names into chat, but very good! Just so that we can keep track of who's answering questions. Alright. So, it can be hardware space, or now it can be these it can be these SD cards. Now, a word of warning, if you want to use a virtual, or not a virtual, an SD card for ReadyBoost, you need to get the right kind. I think we ordered about 3, and none of them were right. So, be careful about that.
One of the ones that I bought 3 years ago worked for ReadyBoost, but the modern cards that I bought from SanDisk and stuff were insufficient data throughput and too high a seek factor for ReadyBoost, so watch out for that.
Protected mode provides 32-bit access to drivers, to memory drivers and transfers between input and output I/O devices. Go ahead, Aiden.
Would memory boost work on virtual machines?
Yeah,
that's a really
but
good question.
Yes, it would. But why would you bother?
Because my computer has 1 gig of RAM in it. Period.
You'd need to get. You've got to understand that. Actually, probably the better thing to do would be put more RAM in it. But we've said that before. What I would say is that ReadyBoost is better than hard disk, but it's still not as good as actually having memory in the computer. I would question whether the virtualization would be slower if using ReadyBoost. You're going to have trouble running virtualization on that hardware. It's not going to be a fun and speedy experience. But if you wanted to get yourself... And also, ReadyBoost is only valid for Vista and Windows 7.
Yeah, okay, because I was going to say, the other laptop I had have 256 megs, so I wouldn't mind increasing that, and I thought maybe virtual memory would do that, but probably not.
Oh, no.
I think the VM layer would cause you too much slowdown using Ready Boost. And honestly, RAM these days is around about the same price as the same thing in an SD card, so you're not actually going to save any money.
Unless it's old like his computers.
Yeah, he needs DDR memory for his ThinkPad.
That's okay, because the computer I'm talking to you on right now would need SD RAM.
Oh, fantastic!
The only scary thing about that is I can still help you out with that.
I could probably go to forallmemory.com and get some, but yeah, I'm good.
Oh no, we've got sticks and sticks and sticks if you really need some.
They're only 256 meg sticks though, Grace.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever they are.
He's got a 512. He's got 768.
Is that FORALL memory or the number 4?
The number 4. I don't think they ship over there, but they're good. If they do, maybe that'd be cool.
You can have a look.
And they do sound cards and stuff, too.
Alright, so what you need to know, basically, about this protected mode is this is what our modern operating systems run on. 32-bit access, or if you're 64-bit, you're going to get 64-bit access. Yes, because this makes sense. Yeah, it does. Alright, we've got virtual real mode, which allows an application that would operate in 16-bit real mode to operate in protected 32-bit mode. This would allow a DOS application to work in Windows XP. It basically tricks it into believing that it has access to all of your memory and resources, but it doesn't. So, there you go. Those are three processor modes. The fourth one is not a processor mode, they just kind of tacked it here, but it is very important. This is called compatibility mode, and it allows applications that are not compatible with newer operating systems to function by providing an environment for of the older OS. So, if you're working in Windows 7 and that game that you loved so much in XP doesn't work, try running it in compatibility mode. No guarantee, but it just might work, and you're really not going to lose anything. The text
and
says
and nobody knows about this.
No. The text says that
like
Vista
nobody
is
knows.
Is
yeah,
very
they do. It's all over the forums. It's just the people you know don't know about it. It's on every gaming forum I ever go. Try running it in compatibility mode. It's everywhere. But they probably just haven't used Google yet today.
Yep. The text says that Vista is very compatible with older applications. And quite honestly, for all the bad things that you could be say about Vista, I'd actually tend to agree with them in the fact that more older applications worked than didn't. So you've got a fairly good shot at these applications working without running in compatibility mode. But if they don't, give it a go in compatibility mode. There are the odd few applications that just won't work and you have to get a virtual machine or say goodbye to them. There are two useful compatibility features that Vista provides. The first feature is that Windows XP Service Pack 2, SP2, compatibility mode. This allows applications that are not compatible with Windows Vista to be executed as if the system were Windows XP SP2. The second feature is a method to override the user account control, UAC. This allows an application to be run even if the user does not have the required administrative privileges. This is the Run as Administrator checkbox, funnily enough. In Windows 7, you can adjust the level of monitoring for UAC. When Windows 7 is installed, the default setting is 33%, or notify me only when programs try to make changes to my computer. What this does for you is pops up a little dialogue saying, are you sure you want to do this? And you have to click continue, and it's all quite a pain. The first thing I do when I'm installing a computer for myself is turn this off, because I usually know what I'm trying to do. But if you don't, it's a really good feature, and it will let you know whenever you are going to do something it thinks might be bad. Go ahead, Sean.
I was really pleasantly surprised at work to see that it came on and said, hey, Java auto update wants to do stuff. And I just didn't feel like dealing with it then, so I chose no. So I actually think sometimes this can be a good thing because it lets you know, hey, something that could potentially annoy you is going to happen. So, you know, So yes, you've gotten in the way by Windows, anyway. But
Java update pops balloons in the system tray anyway. It's like Java
update.
It's not gonna
pop up.
Oh, I thought it was one of the ones that started actually. Yeah, it got in your way. Okay.
Oh no, it'll just sit there until you're ready to deal with it.
That's what Adobe Flash does.
UAC is the one that goes, and then your whole machine like latches up for 14 seconds if you're using Narrator, and then the other copy of Narrator launches and it asks.
See, I've always just done it with JAWS.
Apparently, they deliberately made the screen annoying to look at to try to discourage developers from doing things that would make changes to the computer and use system resources if they didn't have to. Oh no, sorry, that's data execution prevention.
Yeah, that's probably true for UAC as well. I saw a GW Micro article that actually said you should leave it turned on. And for the average computer user, that might be true. But most people, especially the girls, have just about wanted to hug me whenever I've turned it off. You should see the way people cheer up. The guys probably have too. I've just tended to run away very fast.
To adjust the level of UAC or make it go away forever, go to Start, Control Panel, User Account and Family Safety, User Account, Change User Account Control Settings. The Control Panel in Windows 7 has three view options: Category, Large Icons, and Small Icons. You can assume that we will be using the Category view for this lecture. Now, guys, this is not something they did before, but these paths and the way you get to things is something you will want to study and make a note of, and maybe even go into the Control Panel and play with, because you're going to have a lot of these questions, mainly about XP, actually, in your test. You can do that too, and that's what I do. But I'm going to be reading a few more of these paths to you guys, because you will see them in the final. There's like three or four questions on how do you get to this thing, which is not something we've encountered in the past.
Are the icon views easier to navigate with the keyboard, or is it still a mess?
No, it's a mess.
It's okay. Horrific.
So tabbing through categories easier?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or honestly, if you know what you're looking for, type it in the search box and it'll just be there.
That's if you know what
half
to type on. Is
I
it performance
there,
options?
Know.
Is it speed options? Is it performance speed? Is it what word do you actually have to put in to make it come up? Once you know the magic word, and it's one of the things that annoys me about Windows 7, is you install a new program and you don't actually know what the program was called, like where it's actually turned up in the start menu. You're not sure what magic incarnation to type into the box to make it come up. So, for example, when you install Virtual Audio Cable, the actual Virtual Audio Cable Control Panel is actually called Control Panel. There's no virtual in it anywhere. So it can be a bit of a challenge to figure out what magic word to type in. But once you've got the magic word...
See, that would drive me nuts.
Absolutely.
Well, it does.
Spotlight's like that too, though. I mean, let's be fair.
What's like that, sorry?
Spotlight's like that too, let's just be fair.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
Sort of, you know,
for the Mac, yeah, it is.
It's one of the first things I turn off on low-end Macs, it kills Spotlight. Anyway, Grace wants to get on with it, I can hear a sign.
No, that's not it. I was trying to fix my sensitivity because it was just clicking on and off and on and off and on and off, and I think I finally got it. That's alright. If a program does not work in Windows 7 and it worked in an earlier operating system, you can use Compatibility Troubleshooter or set the compatibility settings manually, like you've done in every other version of Windows. To troubleshoot program compatibility in Windows 7, follow these steps. Click Start, Control Panel. In the search box, type Troubleshooter and click Troubleshooting. What? In the list displayed. Under Programs, click Run Programs Made for Previous Versions of Windows and click Next. Windows searches for compatibility issues and a list of programs is displayed. Select the programs you are having problems with and click Next. If the program is not listed, select Not Listed and then Next. Browse to and locate the program and then click Open Next. You can choose Try Recommended Settings to run the program using the settings that Windows 7 has determined to be the most compatible, or you can also choose Troubleshooting Program, which allows you to select troubleshooting steps based on the problems that you noticed.
Question. So how do you stop it from screaming at you every time you install something? This program may have not installed compatibility. Do you want to mess with the compatibility wizard? No, I don't.
Say this program installed correctly and it will not bother you again.
Yeah, but can you stop it from bothering you, like,
no.
At all?
No. So, click Start the program to see if the problem is solved. Usually, it won't be a problem unless it thinks that it was... I have 68.
Is anyone else getting us delayed?
I don't know, let me look.
I am sort of.
Okay, settle down now.
Yes. Seems like it, but...
282.
Okay.
I heard you talking over Ventrilo.
Yeah, we should be alright now. We're sort of hovering around 328.
575.
Special. Yep, Pat, go ahead.
He was just asking if you're cutting in and out, and I said, yeah, you're cutting in and out on me. Like, talk, and
yep.
Then you'll be fine.
10,240.
Yeah, okay.
Now it's back to 500. Craziness.
On the bright side, all the cutting in and out disappears when I take all of the silence out. So, look on the bright side.
That is really strange.
Where's the pin supposed to be?
About 300-400 milliseconds, probably.
Shortly after.
Just up the top.
Whoa, it's showing like 8,000 something now.
I'm getting 42.
Yeah, that's because you're in Brisbane and so is the server.
Oh, it's at Pipe Networks.
Yeah, it's 258.
Yeah, I think so.
1925. That is... 1945, that's special. That's high.
Yeah, that'll explain it. My ISP has piped it.
Okay, yeah, we're back down to 73 now, so we should be alright. Well, it's fluctuating. There's not much we can do. We'll just carry on. It's not our fault.
That is pretty big. Okay, click next for Windows to apply the settings permanently, or repeat the process to choose different settings until you get it right. Or if you don't and then you cry because your program is not going to work. You can also run Compatibility Troubleshooter by right-clicking the program's shortcut or icon and then choosing to start the troubleshoot compatibility. That's the easier way to do it. And why you wouldn't do it that way, I don't know. Go ahead, Pat.
Are the troubleshooters in Windows 7 as bad as they are in XP 2000, all that?
Yep.
Like, you just keep going through them and it doesn't seem to solve anything.
No, they actually work.
Someone today said Windows Solution Center actually solved a problem for them.
It can, actually. They can be quite good, and they will actually work more than your other ones did.
A lot of the time they don't, because there's not enough information for it to actually solve the problem you're having. I mean, let's face it, the network troubleshooter releases the address, it renews the address, it resets the network adapter. Once it's done that, that's about all it can do. It can't magically go around and find the kid that pulled the cable out of the hub or similar. So there are limited things these troubleshooters can do. And whilst they're better in Windows 7, they certainly don't replace the computer technician, but they can occasionally be a quick fix. Sometimes you'll hit repair on the wireless network button and it will repair it. And sometimes it won't.
And then you're like, holy heck, it worked.
Yeah, and you sit there in shock because it never used to work. Alright, now we'll compare 32 and 64-bit operating systems. There are three main differences between 32 and 64-bit OSs. 32-bit operating systems can only use 4 gigs of memory. While 64-bit systems can use more than 128 gigs. That is actually in your test. RAM is managed differently in 64-bit operating systems, which allows for better performance of 64-bit programs. Here's the difference that can be considered the downside of 64-bit operating systems. A 64-bit operating system has additional security features such as kernel patch protection and mandatory driver signing. With kernel patch protection, third-party drivers cannot modify the kernel. With mandatory driver signing, unsigned drivers cannot be used. Can anyone name any 64-bit operating systems? Go ahead, Brad.
Well, I mean, Windows 7, and I think XP actually had a version, right?
XP has a 64-bit version. Yep, that's right. And Vista and Windows 7 can both run... Yeah, absolutely. That's in your test as well. It will ask you which operating systems can be 64-bit compatible. The trick here is, guys, that anything that is XP that does not specifically say 64-bit isn't. So if you remember that, you're going to be fine on that test question.
Also, by default, OS X 10.6 runs a 32-bit kernel and a 64-bit user land. You actually need to mess around to make it go completely into 64-bit.
The architecture used by CPUs, or the two architectures used by CPUs to process data are x86, used by 32-bit operating systems, and x64, used by 64-bit operating systems. x86 uses a complex instruction set computer, CISC architecture, to process multiple instructions with a single request. x86 processors use fewer registers than x64 processors. Registers are storage areas used by the CPU when performing calculations. x64 architecture is backwards compatible with x86 and adds additional registers specifically for instructions that use a 64-bit address space. The additional registers of x64 architecture allow the computer to process much more complex instructions at a much higher rate. That's not in your test, but just so you know, that is the important bit. Now what you want to know, go ahead, Pat.
What does it mean by the word architecture? What are you really talking about there?
I am talking about the way that the processor is built and how the processors process instructions and how the instructions are fed through the processor.
So it's a hardware thing? Plus whatever happens,
both
of course.
Both hardware and software.
It's both. Why they really included this here, I don't know. It's not something that you really will understand too much of for the context of what we're talking about here. It's basically how instructions are processed and how a processor is built internally. What you need to know is you need to understand the kernel patch protection. That you cannot have the kernel modified, that's a question on your final in 64-bit operating systems. You also want to understand the mandatory driver signing, which means you cannot install unsigned drivers. That is really important. You want to know that 32-bit can only register up to 4 gigs of memory, your 64-bit can register more than 128 gigs of memory. So, in summary, that's what you want to know from this section, really. Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, when you say unsigned, what does that mean by signed? And then the kernel thing, can you just kind of explain what the kernel, because I don't quite get that, the kernel.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll explain the kernel a little bit later in the chapter. Yes, we'll explain the kernel a little bit later in the chapter. But the driver signing is basically you have to have somebody sign the drivers, say, yes, these drivers passed these tests. You can install these drivers. These drivers are okay to install. Problem. And welcome, Dina.
Have fun with ping times that are in the hundreds and thousands of milliseconds this morning. So it's not you, it's everyone.
As a technician? Oh, no, no problem. I figured it was something like that. It's all right. You're always here anyway. And I'm sure you know most of the stuff we've already talked about. As a technician, you may end up recommending an operating system for a customer or organization. Actually, you probably will. It's not a you may. This is something you'll be doing. You need to consider the budget and needs of the client and weigh the capabilities and limitations of the operating system. There are two types of operating systems. These are desktop operating systems, used in homes and small offices, and network operating systems, used in larger corporations. A desktop OS has the following characteristics: supports a single user, runs single user applications, shares files and folders on a small network with limited security. In the current software market, the most commonly used desktop operating system falls into three groups: Microsoft Windows, Apple Macintosh, and Unix/Linux. Microsoft Windows is one of the most popular brands of operating systems used today. I believe
this part of the text
may have today the most popular last time. I'll have to look. I don't think it actually something that's actually changed there. Can anyone name some of the Windows desktop operating systems? Go ahead, Jamie.
Windows Vista.
Windows Vista's right. Brad, what about you?
Oh, I was, XP or,
Yep, XP, Windows 7, Vista, all of those are popular Windows desktop operating systems. Windows XP Professional is used, go ahead, Dana.
98, of course. Just kidding.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, you were so delayed. It's okay, though.
Wow, this thing is terrible today.
Yeah, it's
pretty... it's a mess.
I think it's the worst I've ever seen it.
Oh, I've seen it worse. It was randomly dumping people last year. Oh, hello, child.
And who was that?
This is going to get a trouble ticket, because this is basically... Windows XP Professional is used on most computers that will connect to a Windows server on a network. We've got Windows XP Home Edition, used on home computers and has very limited security. Windows XP Media Center, used on entertainment computers for viewing movies and listening to music. Windows XP Tablet PC Edition, used for tablet PCs. Windows 64-bit Edition, used for computers with 64-bit processors. We've got Windows 2000 Professional, older Windows operating system that has been replaced by Windows XP. Hold on.
Yeah, sorry guys, we have no magic ping blasting technology. There is nothing we can do to unclog the chewing gum from the internet. The best we can do is lodge a trouble ticket after the lecture. Our only other option is to actually can the lecture altogether, and then that will put you back behind even more. So I think we just have to sort of battle on and get through as much as we can today. The bright side is that when the recording is edited, the gaps will be taken out. And it actually works quite nicely. So it may not be pleasant this time through, but it'll be better when we're finished, hopefully.
I'm not going to battle on too much longer. We'll probably go 10:30 and stop and pick up next week, because this is pretty terrible. Okay, we've got the Vista brand of operating system. Vista Home Basic, used on home computers for basic computing. Windows Vista Home Premium, used on home computers to expand personal productivity and digital entertainment beyond the basics. Windows Vista Business, used on small business computers for enhanced security and enhanced mobility. Windows Vista Ultimate, used on computers to combine all of the needs of both home and business users. And we've got the new Windows 7 operating systems, which I will go through. We've got Windows 7 Starter. This is going to be used on netbook computers to make networking easy. It's basically really, really, really basic. Windows 7 Home Premium, used on home computers to easily share media. Windows 7 Professional, used on all work computers to secure critical information and to make routine tasks easier to complete. And Windows 7 Ultimate, used on computers to combine the ease of use of Windows 7 Home Premium with the business capabilities of Windows 7 Professional and provide added data security. We've got Apple Mac and,
Great, I disconnected and the recording stopped. Well, time to make a new one.
That's okay. And you were just in time to talk about Mac.
Oh, what about it? OS X Server and OS X Client Edition.
OS X Client.
And the upgrade's like $30, and it's really cheap. And Microsoft should learn something from Apple, and you can buy a family pack, which is also really cheap. Microsoft does have family packets, but
it probably won't be
cheap
when we go from Snow Leopard to Lion, though.
Yeah, OS X upgrades have typically been around the $130, $140 mark. It was only the Leopard to Snow Leopard upgrade that was that cheap.
Okay.
I agree.
Certainly cheaper than the comparable Microsoft upgrades, generally speaking. Going from XP to Vista wasn't cheap.
Well, I didn't know they were $130. My last upgrade was like only $30.
And this is actually getting more popular. One of the advantages for blind people is that it has its own built-in screen reader called VoiceOver. Apple computers are proprietary and use an operating system called macOS. macOS is designed to be a user-friendly GUI operating system. They are based on customized versions of Unix now. Macs, you're not really going to take a screwdriver to or take apart. Not really customizable in the hardware department. What you get is what you get. It's proprietary. You're not meant to take it apart, and it's meant to just work. Unix was introduced in the late 1960s. It is one of the oldest operating systems. There are many different versions of Unix today. One of the most recent is the extremely popular Linux.
It's working again now. Sorry, laptop crashed.
This was developed by... That's okay. This was developed by Linus Torvald in 1991, and it is designed as an open-source operating system. Can anyone tell me what open source means? Go ahead, Brad.
Just basically means it's not proprietary, and it's, like with Linux, there's various distributions of it that it's kind of a common community effort to make those, and it's,
Yes, that. Yeah. Yeah, these allow the source code to be distributed and changed by anyone as a free download or from a developer at a much lower cost than other operating systems. So, it's basically going to be very easy to get a hold of and modify. Anyone can add anything to the code that they'd like to. A network OS has the following characteristics. Supports multiple users, runs multi-user applications, is robust and redundant, provides increased security compared to desktop operating. These are the most common network operating systems. Microsoft Windows Network Operating Systems, offered by Microsoft, are Windows 2000 Server, Windows Server 2003, and Windows Server 2008. Windows Server operating systems use a central database called Active Directory to manage network resources. You'll probably never hear any more about Active Directory in ITE1, so there you go. That's about it for Active Directory talk. Novell NetWare was the first OS to meet network OS requirements and enjoyed widespread deployment in PC-based local area networks, LANs, back in the 1980s. We've got Linux. Linux operating systems include Red Hat, Caldera, SUSE, which is dead, I think, Debian, Fedora, Ubuntu, and Slackware. We've got Unix. Various corporations offer proprietary operating systems based on Unix. So there you go. You guys have a worksheet on... Isn't OpenSUSE dead, Carrie?
No, SUSE is not dead, as far as I know.
Okay.
It's, there's OpenSUSE, but as far as I know, it's still out there, and there are still the enterprise versions being sold by Novell.
Yeah, SUSE is still alive, Caldera isn't.
Wrong, sorry. Oh, okay, I knew one of them had died, and I just couldn't remember, I thought it was that one. I'm making it up. Sorry. Sort of. Okay.
Red Hat's the commercial version, Fedora's the desktop version.
And Red Hat you get to pay plenty of money for.
And some of us would argue that if you have specific support requirements, that might be a good thing to do, but generally speaking, there are some of us who believe that Red Hat / Fedora isn't actually that worth running. Depends on who you talk to, though.
Now, if you want to run Red Hat without paying for support, you use CentOS.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Pat.
What is the best version for a blind person to be using?
How long's a piece of string? Seriously. It depends what you want to do. It depends who's around to teach you. It depends who's on the other end of the phone to support you. It depends on what resources you have available to you, what applications you're going to run. Some friends of ours in Melbourne have been running Red Hat for the last 5 years, but are looking forward to switching to Ubuntu because it's just better for what they want to do. But originally they installed Red Hat because they actually had people who could answer their Red Hat questions. All major Linux distributions ship with Orca, so whether you're running Red Hat, Fedora, SUSE, Ubuntu, Debian, or something else I haven't even mentioned, it's probably likely that you can, and Gentoo, it's probably you can get going pretty well. Vinix
Absolutely.
Is the one that comes up talking with Braille and large speech. However, Vinix is bloated, takes up a lot of hard disk space, and bundles a whole lot of applications that are actually inaccessible. Have fun with that.
It's not bad, though. I've had a play with it, and it's quite cool. We want
Thanks.
To, when we're making an OS... No problem. To make an OS recommendation, you must review budget constraints, of course, and learn how the computer will be used, and determine which types of application will be installed. When helping your customer choose an operating system, it's important that it is compatible with all applications the customer uses, and if it is on a network, it must be compatible with all computers on the network. This is really important, because if it's not, you're going to be the one they're screaming at. So you want to do a really good job with this first step and make sure that all of their applications are compatible. Microsoft networks can have computers with many different Microsoft operating systems. Here are some things you should investigate when choosing an operating system. Does the computer have off-the-shelf applications or customized applications that were programmed specially for this customer? If the customer will be using a customized application, the programmer of that application will specify which operating system is compatible with it. This is the worst way to find new operating systems for. Most off-the-shelf applications specify a list of compatible operating systems on the outside of the application package. Or you can go to the website and see if there's any possibility of updating the application for new operating systems if the operating system has become obsolete. Are the application programmed for a single user or multiple users? This information helps you decide whether to recommend a desktop OS or a network OS. Oh, and speaking of the word network OS, this has just triggered something for me to tell you guys about. 5.2.2 is researching network operating system certifications and jobs. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that because some people have trouble with this worksheet. What type of certifications can we research? Let's have a little bit of a brainstorm session about that quickly.
I've done RHCE, which is the Red Hat cert.
We've also got that. We've got that one. The CCNA. Yep, go ahead.
I'm not convinced your microphone's working this morning, Dina. We can't hear you. Things like the A+, the CCNA, CompTIA exams, MCSE. I always used to think it was the MSCE, but it's not. MCSA is another one, the Microsoft Certified System Architect. Has anybody ever remembered when the MS Society came out with the slogan MS, it's not just a software company?
Extremely far, far away.
Okay, I'll check that.
Yeah, you can use Microsoft certifications. I think there is a network certification. A+ is, you're fine. I can hear you quite well. Yeah, there are lots of them.
You should be able to Google
that you
those
can up. Do that up. And the website, the vendor website, will definitely have lots of information on that. Yeah, you'll need to... Mm-hmm. Oh, he's very quiet. You are very quiet.
Oh, Dina's really, really quiet. Okay, I thought you were talking about me.
Yeah, I thought that's... Yeah.
No, you're nice and loud.
He sounds fine, but he keeps talking and he sounds like he's...
Yeah, we can't... You're almost inaudible.
Yeah, bash those volume sliders on that microphone. If you under sound...
Okay, try that now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Now we can hear you. Yeah, exactly.
You were so quiet, it sounded as though you were talking to us from South Africa without the aid of Ventrilo.
I know.
Oh!
it felt like that.
No, you've gone quiet again.
Yeah, you might want to go closer to your microphone. No, you're louder than you were.
Any better?
Yeah, that's better.
You gotta know the server's acting somewhat flaky too, so it's probably not just you.
So our server's acting extra special today. It's great. They're gonna.
I think it got up at 2:30 in the morning too.
There may be latency issues beyond their control, unfortunately. We'll have to see what they say. I don't. I'd say they're overcommitted. Their resources are overcommitted.
Yeah, it's the first time it's ever happened in what.
We've also had a problem here in South Africa where. Our service provider is overcommitted as well.
This is not the first time it's happened. It happens a couple times a year, and this is really bad.
Oh, I can hear crickets.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's coming from here.
Yeah, that's what we thought. We can hear the crickets. I actually have a blind friend who goes around with a tin of Mortein spraying them because he can't stand the noise. I wouldn't condone that sort of behavior, but some people do that.
Now that's awful. Crickets are awesome.
I know.
To be fair, if you've heard them in Australia, they are incredibly loud, much louder than you ever thought possible, and they're really loud. And to be honest, I have been known to go out with a can of Mortein myself if you get a really loud one because they're phenomenal.
Oh my gosh!
Well, you know, I use the ambient sound app for the eye devices, and I should go on there and see if they have. Some Australian crickets. If not, you can actually record your own sounds with it now. So I may have to get somebody to do that.
I've got a cricket sample for you. I can make that happen. Of Australian crickets.
Awesome. Awesome. I may change my tune on those things.
They're sort of a bit like an Ethernet. Once you sort of kill about three or four of them, the whole neighborhood shuts down because they realize that something's happened to their mates. That's pretty incredible. Anyway, back to the lecture.
Okay. If the computer will be connected to a network, make sure to recommend the same OS platform that the other computers on the network use. Are any data files shared with other computers, such as a laptop or home computer? To ensure compatibility of file formats, recommend the same OS platform that the other data file sharing computers use. So if it's Mac, Mac. If it's Microsoft, Microsoft. As an example, your customer has a Windows network installed and wants to add more computers to the network. In this case, you should recommend a Windows OS for the new computers. Even if you love Mac, that doesn't matter unless these people are willing to go all Mac, including their servers, and learn how to do that all. You need to recommend Windows just for simplicity and ease of use.
Try making that argument in a university.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's nice in theory, but because universities get such education discounts, you'll end up with half Mac, half Windows, and have fun with that.
Yeah, you can try.
I run that here.
We're lucky, though, because Macs and...
In South Africa, it's mainly Windows.
Yeah. Macs and Windows play nicer than they used to, so just be glad for that, because it could be a whole lot worse.
Dave, anyone? Anybody remember Dave by Thursby Systems that used to put on OS X 9 to make it talk to Samba? Ooh.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
If customer...
Anyone heard of an operating system that came out a while ago called Lindo?
Isn't that something that goes over... Isn't that like a GUI for Linux?
No.
We love our samples as well.
Between Windows and
it was like Linux that was meant to be like Windows, and Microsoft actually went after it.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, they got sued for trademark infringement.
I don't know if any. I think people who actually ran it found it quite good. Although, just as an interesting story, and I'm not mentioning anybody particularly here, but speaking of wives that managed to trash complete computers, we had a friend a few weeks back, it was probably about 3 or 4 months ago, and his wife had been to one of those click here on Facebook links just once too often, and this had been the third time that the virus had hammered the computer. And this person said words that I can't say on this lecture and said, "Right, that's it. This machine gets Ubuntu." And apparently after about the first 20 minutes of complaining, all the complaining stopped, and she's never been happier in her life because nothing goes wrong with the computer anymore.
Found out that was actually safer
I have a similar girlfriend
for her
story.
To use than Windows, huh?
Yeah, well, we had another one. We actually had another one where a friend of ours, Chris Legg, actually went into this old person's place and sort of said, "Look, I'm going to put this operating system on your computer, and if you want me to come back in 2 weeks' time, I'll put Windows on if you're having any problems." And he loaded it on, and he came back in 2 weeks' time, and she said, "Don't you dare put that Windows rubbish back onto my computer! Get away from it!"
Don't be needing that anymore. It's funny when you get people into that, they actually decide they like things better. I'm trying to get my mother-in-law into a Mac now, actually, because she's the same type of click into anything.
To answer Brian's question, yes, there are viruses that can attack Linux, but it's much, much harder to do, and there's far fewer of them.
Well, we got Bliss once. That was not fun.
Yeah, we had a run of that through work, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, thanks,
playing with their iPod when we're supposed to be playing in lecture? Okay. we're supposed to be paying attention.
Good to see you've got Light Probe, though, Edward. Glad to see you got Light Probe. Yeah. Good app, that one.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Actually, that was due to last week's lecture when I went down to listen to it, because I had just come back in from Baltimore last week, and I caught that, and I thought, that might be a handy little app, so I put it in my list, recorded it, download, and actually finally got around to it.
We were listening to you play with your iPod, your iPhone.
Should we stop?
Yeah, we're going to stop here, and we will try to do this again next week after I complain bitterly to these people.
I would see what the issue was before I jumped in with both feet.
Oh, no, I'm going to write and say we're having... I mean, I'm not going to, like be horrible. I'm just basically going to tell them what the problem is and say, do we know why?
Of course, you know, once we stop the lecture and go into something else, it's going to clear all that.
It'll be fine.
Absolutely. Well, it's not as bad as it was, but it's still pretty...
It's
pretty
holding on 67 now.
When you were talking earlier, I just almost couldn't... It was...
I almost couldn't figure out what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Actually, the ping is actually coming down to like 700 and something. That's as better than I've ever had.
All right, tasks for this week. 5.2.2, 5.3.2, 5.4.8. We will work on those together at the 5.4.8 tomorrow at 9 a.m. So come and we'll work on that. And if it is horrible, we'll move to team talk. But it should be okay. And
so if we haven't done other ones yet, we can still do this one now, right?
Yes. Yes,
you can.
You
don't have to do them in order.
You don't have to go in order.
We never... But if you'd like to, that's cool, if it helps you. However,
if
you do get stuck on a particular lab... If you do get stuck on a particular lab,
flag it to me right away.
You can move on to the next one.
But do please flag it, because we'll help you.
Yeah, we actually want to help you with the labs, because we know they're...
Okay, it's just because the last little while around here has been madness. Now it's all back to normal, so...
You're fortunate in that you have about four labs you didn't have to do because of the live demo that you guys put together and did.
Has that been listened to yet? Is it fun?
No, that has not been listened to yet. It needs to be listened to, but it's been crazy over here, too, so... you did it, and you know, I've heard that it was great from all of you guys, and I've heard lots of different stories, so I know it's been done, and so I've passed you all in those labs. But 3.9.2 and 2.2.2 and 4.0.0 you're still responsible for. The only real hard one of that is 3.9.2, and that's basically it's
that was,
you know,
a toughie.
It can
now, what's
be.
The date on the zip down. File for the labs? Is that February 26th? Is that when they were done last?
I wasn't done with things. I want you guys to read. I want you guys to read the installing operating systems and update labs for both Vista and XP. You don't have to do anything, but I'd like you to read them because we're going to talk about especially the operating system installs labs and compare them. And just have a little talk about how it's done in Vista and XP and your update ones. That's about it for this week. So you've got the three labs that you're responsible for, the two research labs, and your 5.4.8, which we'll do, as many of us will do together as possibly can on Friday, because it'll be much easier if I walk everybody through. Because it can be a tough lab.
And Grace, of course, will be posting this list of labs that she's just told you to Cavi announce very soon so that it's on paper, because that would be a good thing.
Absolutely. You are not responsible for the Module 5 test, of course, so don't worry about that. Work ahead if you can, because it will save you later on, because you don't get a break.
No Module 4 test. Just in
no
case
module
you missed
4 test.
My
You're not responsible for
message.
Any module 4
I
test.
I didn't do a very good job of letting people know about that, and I apologize.
You guys don't get a break until module 7. 5 and 6 are quite heavy. So if you guys can do as much work as you can fit in without getting overwhelmed, you'll be happy people.
So there, are we doing 3.9.2 Torontonians, or is that count as the other stuff?
Torontonians have to do 3.9.2.